I'd like to thank the organizers of this conference for putting together this great diverse group of talks, and also I guess I'd like to thank Jack, who we're honoring, because for how fun he's made homotopy theory, and maybe I'm going to spend the first part of my talk describing a sort of picture that he initiated in studying the stable homotopy groups of spheres. And what I'll eventually be focusing on is sort of, this is the chromatic filtration, and I'll eventually be focusing on the second chromatic layer and some work of four authors, Paul Gorse, Hans Werner Henn, Mark Mahold, and Charles Resk. And they produce a very explicit description that the prime three of what happens at the second chromatic layer that uses spectra related to TMF, this spectrum of Hopkins and Miller, and well, TMF has something to do with elliptic curves, and so what I'm going to describe is how to use isogenies of elliptic curves to sort of put these things together and reproduce something that looks sort of like the thing that these four authors that I mentioned before put together. Now, I should say that this whole sort of approach is not initiated by me, but Charles Resk and Mark Mahold have been studying this sort of thing for a long time and had done a lot of these things in this direction as well. So let me start with describing the chromatic filtration. Now, what sort of maybe also inspired by most of the talks of this week, I decided to sort of make this talk a little more fanciful than I normally would, and also try and sort of hide some of the sort of details of what's going on in flavor of sort of more descriptive language. So you'll have to excuse me when. I'm going to try and say things in a way that maybe isn't exactly correct, or maybe I don't even know how to say them correctly, but I'm going to try anyway to say things in this way. Now, Takashi already told us about the chromatic filtration and this whole sort of Lubin Tate picture, but I'm just going to sort of recap what's going on. So the starting point here is Quillen's theorem. And, one way of thinking about, what Quillen says is that it's a very natural way of identifying spec of the complex cobordism ring with the moduli space of formal group laws. Now, what do I mean by a formal group law? That means a formal group with a coordinate. So you have this sort of formal scheme, but then you have chosen an isomorphism with the formal affine lines. That coordinate is part of the data of a formal group law. So in particular, this thing is actually affine, and all of the formal groups that you consider here are one-dimensional commutative formal groups. And then, well, there's a further piece of data here, which is the cohomology operations, or the co-operations, really, the MU. I'm sorry?
What? You said spec MU star is affine?
Yeah, I guess because it's written that way. I mean, it's
oh, affine variety.
Affine, yeah, affine variety. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, and spec MU star MU is the MU homology of MU. And this thing, well, if a point of this corresponds to a formal group law, a point of this thing actually corresponds to an isomorphism of formal group laws. But actually, things are cooked up in such a way such that this isomorphism it has derivative one. So we're going to sort of not worry about that distinction for the time being. Now, in particular, what this really is this is sort of a, a group of changes of coordinates. And here these are formal groups with a coordinate. We can allow this group of change of coordinates to act by changing the coordinates. And if I take the data of a formal group with a coordinate and then mod out by the changes of all coordinates, then I'm just going to get the moduli space of formal groups. So I'm just going to write this. And then compare that to something that we do in that's done in. So this is a moduli space of formal groups. Now, as I said, you have to be a little careful here because these things are actually, you have some extra data, the data of like a tangent vector or something. But throughout this talk, I'm going to gloss over that distinction in favor of, you know, easing the discussion. Okay. Now topologically, what's going on is well, we have topologically this sort of quotient. I've written the two bars to indicate sort of a stacky quotient. And topologically, you do that with a co-bar complex. Or, let me write it this way, is that you would take mu, and then mu is a mu smash mu co-module. And so what you would do is you would form this co-simplicial object. I'm just going to draw the co-face maps. Then you take the totalization of this thing. Oops. this is something that corresponds to this quotienting out process. Now this is something that is called the mu nilpotent completion of the sphere. It's a name like that. But I don't know who this is due to. I want to put Bousfield because he sort of identifies this process with mu localization, which really does nothing to the sphere spectrum. And so this thing is actually just the sphere. So now what we've done is we've related the sphere somehow to formal groups. Now, somehow the sphere corresponds to the moduli space of formal groups, much like mu corresponds to the moduli space of formal group laws. Now, if we're interested in the homotopy groups of this object, then there's a Bousfield-Kahn spectral sequence, or a Adams-Novikov spectral sequence, as it's usually called, that starts with sort of the cohomology of the complex that you get from this thing. And one way to write that E2 term is the cohomology of the moduli space of formal groups. And I'm going to, you know, I mean, as I said, you have to worry about this tangent vector or whatnot, but I'm going to, you know, sort of forget about that. Now, in fact, oftentimes I'll just sort of ignore this. If I write just cohomology of the space, what I mean is the sheaf cohomology of this space or this stack or what have you, and I'll just sort of not even write the O for the structure sheaf. Okay, so well, maybe we want to understand this. This is supposed to be the structure sheaf of this stack. And so I'm even going to just drop off the notation of the structure sheaf when I refer to this in the future. Now, so we could view understanding the homotopy groups of spheres as being analogous to trying to understand this sheaf cohomology group. Now, well, one way to do this is a method that's used in algebraic geometry, whereby I guess I learned this from this paper of Gross and Hopkins, where I have this very useful table where they relate things between homotopy groups of spheres and sheaves or spectra and sheaves. So I'm going to sort of reproduce for you roughly the idea, which is that inside this moduli space of formal groups, there sits inside a closed sub-variety, sub-stack, and this guy consists of all formal groups let me let me at this point work P locally. So from this point on in this talk, we're going to be working P locally, and then we're going to localize more things as we go on, and eventually we'll be working K2 locally at the prime 3. But you know, let's sort of gradually localize. And so Vn will be all formal groups. So now we're working P locally, and so we can talk in like the mod P reduction of these things. And we're going to look at all formal groups whose mod P reduction has height greater than n. Now, the height of the formal group is what you get when you, well, if I looked at the p-fold multiplication on the formal group, the p-th power map, that's going to be, if I wrote it in a coordinate, then that would look like some power series. And if I'm working mod p, the first term would want to be px, but that's not there. And so it turns out that it has to start out somewhere in something like x to the p to the n plus higher terms. And this n is the height of the group. And so this gives you a sequence of decreasing closed subspaces.
What map is that?
This is the map on the formal group. So this is the map, if you have a formal group, this is the map from G to itself, which is given by just x goes to x plus will be the group addition, x plus x plus plus x, and this is p times. All right, so this gives us a sequence of decreasing closed subvarieties sitting inside here, so, you know, sub things, and well, we could consider the complements of these things. So un is going to be mfg without vn. And, well, then these things are increasing. They get bigger. So un is contained in un plus 1. And then, so you might try and understand the derived global sections of this sheaf by understanding its restriction to these various opens. And these things get bigger and bigger, and you might hope that you'd capture all the information as they range over all these things. And so let me say that, let's go back to topology, taking the cohomology of the restriction of our previous sheaf, so I'm just gonna write it like this, taking the sheaf cohomology of UN with coefficients in this restriction of the structure sheaf is really the E2 term of an Adams-Novikov spectral sequence that converges to the homotopy groups of the LN local sphere. Now, LN is localization with respect to EN. This is Nth Johnson-Wilson theory. So there's a spectrum which you can localize by, and it produces exactly this phenomenon. Well, we don't have a field. We don't yet have, but we will. Yeah. So if you run the Adams-Novikov spectral sequence for LNS, this will be your E2 term. So anyway, let's see here what I want to say. Right. So now, the only issue, let's suppose that you understand this group. Let's suppose you understand the LN local, or the LN local sphere. Let me say that these things form a tower. So there's a chromatic tower. Where these things map down, because we restrict the smaller open subsets in this world. And so you get this tower. And you might say, well, let's suppose that we're at the n minus first layer. How could we understand the nth layer? How could we bootstrap ourselves up to the next thing? And the idea is to sort of understand what happens between un minus 1 and un. Well, this open is sort of contained in this open. So how do you get there? What we're going to do is glue on a sort of a little neighborhood of the preceding thing and sort of write out a push-out square. So we're going to write we're just going to write un as the union of some opens and their intersection. So sitting inside of un is a neighborhood of, so un is the complement of vn, and vn minus 1 is bigger, and we can look at a neighborhood of vn minus 1 sitting inside of un. So sitting inside here is un intersect a neighborhood of vn minus 1, and then the intersection of this and this will be un minus 1 intersect a neighborhood of vn minus 1. And so the idea is that this sort of push-out will give us a pullback. And so the result is you get a homotopy pullback. By neighborhood, I mean a formal neighborhood. And so the homotopy pullback that results is, well, we want to understand what happens between ln minus 1 of, say, the sphere, or replace the sphere with any finite complex. It really doesn't matter, but I'm using the sphere. I've got everything all mixed up, don't I? There we are. I have to reverse the entire diagram. Okay, so. So this process of restricting to this neighborhood of vn minus 1 means you localize further. You localize with respect to this Morava K-theory. And then what you put here is ln minus 1 lkn. And this is a homotopy pullback. So as you try and build up this chromatic tower, you just have to understand these layers. We also have to understand how they're attached. And Takashi talked a little bit about that, but let's just focus on the layers for now. It's an arithmetic square, yes. Right. So let me just mention that it would be useless to look at these approximations unless you knew the approximations got closer and closer. And so a key thing here is this chromatic convergence theorem of Hopkins and Ravenel. Which says that at least P locally, and we're working P locally implicitly from now on, S or any finite complex here is the homotopy inverse lim, and I'm just writing lim of these approximations. So we can recover the sphere from this. So this is really a sort of convergent tower. In fact, this converges in a very strong sense. All right, now how are these Lubin Tate spaces related? So Lubin Tate moduli spaces. So Takashi talked a lot about these things. I just want to remind you guys what's going on here is that the idea is that you look at a moduli space of deformations, a particular model of a formal group. So say you fix a height n formal group over some characteristic p perfect field k, and then you want to consider we want to consider moduli, and the objects that we're taking moduli of are, well, say we're looking at the objects over R, which is a complete some sort of complete local ring, and the idea is that this is supposed to be a picture of spoof of R, and so it has a sort of a special fiber, And you want to consider formal groups. I'm going to draw the same picture that Takashi drew, because I like these pictures so much. So you want to consider formal groups that are gamma, or some pullback of gamma with respect to a certain a map of spec K into the special fiber of, you know, thing. Or I guess I want formal groups that restrict to my fixed model when I map spec K in here. And so they're deformations over this sort of small neighborhood of this point. And except I want to identify two different deformations. So the objects are deformations over the whole thing that restrict to gamma. I want to identify any two of these things if I have a map of formal groups. Say G and G prime are two deformations. I want to identify any two things if I have a map of the formal groups that when I restrict it to this fiber is actually the identity. So this was the moduli problem that Lubin and Tate studied, and they show that in fact this moduli space for this moduli problem is actually affine, or formally affine, because it's spoof of a certain ring, and I'm going to write that as En lower star. Now again, there's a sort of tangent. So spoof is spec, but it's spec in the world of complete things. So when you're looking at sort of, you know, it's when you're considering maps that sort of that map the maximal ideal into the maximal ideal. So if you're looking at R points of some they're formal things. Yes, this is a formal scheme. Yeah, it's infinitesimal. It's very small. And this Lubin-Tate moduli space is actually affine in the world of formal schemes. And here I've written it En lower star. This E sub N is Morava E theory, and its formal group corresponds to a universal such deformation. And so its coefficient ring is the ring that classifies this. All right, how does this moduli problem relate to our previous moduli problem? Well, so we have the moduli space of formal groups, and these are formal groups. So you know the universal deformation is a particular formal group. So it'll have a classifying map to this classifying space of all formal groups, And now, sitting inside of here is one of these things that we're interested in, one of these UN intersect neighborhood VN minus 1s that are sort of of interest to us. Actually, these guys, they certainly are in UN because their restriction to the special fiber is height n, so they're not of higher height than n, but actually everything is really close to, ooh, I should say here that in this particular situation, I want to fix gamma to be the Honda height n formal group over fp to the n. Anyway, but in particular, this thing has height n, and so we're always nearby there, so we're in this neighborhood of Vn minus 1. So this map actually factors through here. Except that the moduli space of formal groups, you've quotient it out by all automorphisms of formal groups, whereas here we don't have all automorphisms of these deformations. We've only done some of them, right? I mean, that sort of made this nice. So let's do the rest of them. Well, these were the ones where we fixed our automorphisms to restrict to the identity on the special fiber, and so we could add some more. And this is where this Morava stabilizer group comes in. So we look at the automorphism group of gamma. These are sort of all the rest, right? The automorphism group of gamma is what is called the nth Morava stabilizer group, and we can even make it even a little bigger. It turns out that you can extend this to even cut down the ground field here. So let Gn be the semi-direct product of Sn with the Galois group of Fp to the n over Fp. And then, these are the rest of the. So Lubin and Tate showed that this actually acts on the moduli space. And so if I have any non-trivial automorphism, it'll sort of extend modulo the ones we've already quotiented out by to the whole thing. And so what I can do is I can quotient this out further by the action of this group, and it'll still map in here because I already quotiented it out by all these isomorphisms of formal groups when I was looking at the moduli space of formal groups. And what Jack says is this is a good approximation to what's going on here. This map, in particular, he proved that this map induces an isomorphism on cohomology. Now, let me just say that another name for this symbol that actually has no meaning the way I've written it is, maybe it does have meaning to word, you know, people that know what to do with it, but I don't. But I know what this means. So this is the continuous cohomology of this. These groups are profinite groups, and this is the continuous cohomology of this group as it acts on this coordinate ring for the moduli space. Nevertheless, it stands. I should say that, remember that this is the E2 term of an Adams-Novikov spectral sequence by the correspondence that I described here to the homotopy groups of the KM local sphere. Now, these are the guys we're interested in as we build up these chromatic layers. All right. So really, I guess what I really want to talk about today is to consider a related sort of approximation where instead of using this Lubin-Tate moduli space, we restrict ourselves to chromatic level 2 and we try and approximate things using the moduli space of elliptic curves. See, this was good because these objects are sort of easier to understand. These are actually, believe it or not, these are computable and mysterious. And so this was sort of, I think, a breakthrough in sort of understanding computationally what's going on. And the idea is that these moduli spaces of elliptic curves are also very easy to compute with in practice. And so what's the relationship here? Both. I mean, the. Oh, I should. I, yeah, so this ring actually has a very explicit description. It's the Witt ring over FP to the N of double adjoin some deformation parameters. And, well, we actually make this into a cohomology theory. We adjoin some Bott element, some periodicity generator. So the action, this profinite group is explicitly, you explicitly describe it, and the action was explicitly described by work of Devonitz and Hopkins. They give explicit formulas for the action. I mean, I'm not saying the formulas are necessarily easy to use, but they're there. I mean, you can just, you know, so I mean, this is very explicit, and Ravenel has, given a lot of techniques for computing these kind of cohomology groups using extending techniques of May, and you really can work with these things. Shimomura and related people have done loads of computations with these things. There's a whole literature of these sorts of computations. Okay, let me. Oh, I did want to mention one thing. So I guess I have to put a series of, I'm going to put a series of names. DevNet, Gorth, Hopkins, Miller. So what I'm about to say is combines various groups of various sub-authors here that show this, is that this profinite group GN can actually be made, well, let me say many things here. EN, this Morava E theory, is actually an E-infinity ring spectrum. This was Gorth and Hopkins. And then Hopkins and Miller showed that GN acts on this thing, and then the Gorth-Hopkins work shows that GN even acts on the nose by E-infinity ring spectrum maps. And, then work of Devenitz and Hopkins allows you to make sense of the following construction. You can take homotopy fixed points with respect to this continuous GN action. And Daniel Davis has something to say about how to think about this as a continuous action. And this thing is actually equivalent to the KN local sphere. So this is a sort of topological model, and then when you view it from this point of view, this Adams-Novikov spectral sequence is nothing more than a homotopy fixed point spectral sequence, where you're understanding homotopy groups of this thing from the homotopy groups of Morava E theory and the action. Okay, so now we're in a place where we can... I'm spending way too much time describing this, but... And I feel as if there's lots of people in the room that could do it better justice, but I can't resist. Okay, so let's go to height one. And let me describe a sort of revisionist picture of some results that were done for n equals 1, the K1 local sphere. So here, we're not going to use elliptic curves. We're going to use a moduli space of multiplicative groups. And so, well, moduli space of multiplicative groups, there's one multiplicative group. But it's a moduli space or moduli stack because this thing has an automorphism. Namely, there's the map from the multiplicative group to itself that sends an element of the multiplicative group to its inverse. And so this is a action by the group Z mod 2. And so we quotient out this point by Z mod 2. We get a stack, and that's M mult. Okay, that's the moduli space of multiplicative groups. Now this thing has, now I'm going to get into things related to what Jacob was talking about in his talk, is that this thing has its structure sheaf, well, you could regard it as a sheaf of E-infinity ring spectra, if you like. And so this thing has a structure sheaf of E-infinity ring spectra, and if I evaluate it on this point, it will spit out KU, complex K theory. However, if I want to evaluate it on this modulo, the Z mod 2 action, so the sections of these sheaves are E infinity ring spectra, and so this is KU homotopy fixed points with this group action, or otherwise known as KO. Okay. Now, right. How is this related to the K1 local sphere? Yeah, I shouldn't erase. I'm erasing right now, but let's do it anyway. So, let me say that the endomorphisms of the multiplicative group fit inside the endomorphisms of its formal completion. Now, the formal completion of the multiplicative group, it's one of these formal groups that we're considering, and this thing has height 1. So it's a model for this this Honda height 1 formal group. So we're interested, fitting inside here, by the way, are the automorphisms of GM, and that's explicitly given by the group of units is ZP, but this is what is the first Mirava stabilizer group. Now, sitting inside here are certain endomorphisms that, well, they're not isomorphisms of GM. There's not many isomorphisms of GM, but certain endomorphisms which become automorphisms of the formal group once we take this completion. So let's just fix L prime to P. And what I want to look at here is end L GM. What I mean by this is all endomorphisms of GM that have degree of power of L. And so these things are going to, in particular, have derivatives that allow them to be inverted once you're in this formal completion. And so this inclusion will actually factor through the automorphisms. Here, these guys, you should think of these as just the endomorphisms given by Z goes to Z to the L to the K for various K. These are the L to the K power maps. And they map to the numbers L to the K sitting inside here. Well, if you choose L to be a ZP cross is a topologically cyclic profinite group. And if you choose L appropriately such that this subset is dense within here, then that's a good choice of L. What do I mean by good choice? Well, then we can sort of, okay, let me move back and try and draw what we've got here. We have our moduli space of formal groups, and then sitting inside here is U1 intersect a neighborhood of V0. V0 is a little weird, but we won't get into this. Basically, it means, I mean, it's just, so basically what this means is I have to really consider working in a p-complete world in order to factor through a neighborhood of V0. But let me just assume implicitly that I'm doing that. So the multiplicative group has a completion, so it maps to the moduli space of formal groups. And this factors through this, because these things have height 1. Except that, well, if I could make sense of this, what do I mean here? Mod out by these endomorphisms that turn into automorphisms once I complete, then, well, this in particular should also factor through here. So I should get something like that. The idea is this is a good approximation. Much in the same way that Mirava's change of rings theorem was a good approximation. And well, what I mean by this is, well, let me first make sense of this symbol. So I'm going to form a simplicial stack that looks like this. I'm actually not going to write any degeneracies. I'm only going to write face maps. It's a delta thing. Delta stacker. So let me explain. It only has 0 simplices and 1 simplices. And the objects, the simplicial object, are stacks. And here, the objects are multiplicative group. And the morphisms in this thing are the multiplicative group, the Elf power map on the multiplicative group, the generator of these degree L guys, the generator of end L. And then these two maps are the source and the target of these maps. Now this is something that this simplicial object, I guess, is what I want you to think of when I write M mult mod and L, this symbol that maybe doesn't make sense. Is a sort of more concrete thing. And in particular, I could apply my contravariant functor, which is this sheaf of E infinity ring spectra, O mult to this diagram, and then, well, what do I get? I get KO, and then I have a co-simplicial object, co-simplicial E infinity ring spectra. And here, it turns out that the L power map corresponds to the side of the L, and the other one corresponds to 1. And I could, well, this is a co-simplicial object. I desperately want to totalize it or take the take the fiber of the difference of these things, and this is what is called the J spectrum. Well, the relevance of that, I mean, this has lots of geometric relevance, but I'm not going to get into that. I want to get into the relevance from the chromatic filtration. This thing is the K1 local sphere. Now, this equivalence was proved by Adams and Baird, and then also by Ravenel. So we want a similar model where we have TMFs floating around instead of KOs. It gives us a very spectra that we like. Gives us a nice description of the K2 local sphere. Well, really, from this point on, I'm going to work K2 locally, and I'm going to focus in on the prime 3, because the prime's greater than or equal to 5. You really don't need things like TMF. It's much better to just work with BPs, or, you know, these sort of, you know, Johnson-Wilson spectra and whatnot. You know, no need to go to the TMF. It just has extra junk. But the first place where things get hard is the prime 3, and things get really hard at the prime 2, because these, you know, because people are still really working on that. And but let me focus in. So from now on, work K2 locally, and then and specifically, I'm going to put in parentheses P equals 3, because some things I say won't depend on P equals 3, but I'm not going to distinguish between that and when you do need P to equal. In particular, what I say now, P is definitely 3. So, as I mentioned, Gorse, Hen, Moholwald, and Resk, they produce a tower that looks like this using TMF and another spectrum, which I'm going to... We're working K2 locally. TMF goes to TMF. They produce a tower of spectra. I'm going to explain what this means in a moment. They produce a tower of this form, and this tower has the property that, well, every composite of every consecutive map is null homotopic, and all of the higher total brackets amongst various internal compositions of these maps also have zero contained inside their total brackets. What this means is this implies that actually this tower refines to a spectrum built out of these things whose attaching maps are given by the maps in the tower. And the spectrum that this refines to is the K2 local sphere. Now, I should say that Katsumi Shimomura and Wang, these two authors, Shimomura and Wang, they already actually computed this. So you might ask, well, why are we even looking at this any longer? We actually already know the answer. But their computation, I mean, many things. First off, it's a conceptually beautiful decomposition, but also this computation of Shimomura and Wang is so difficult that even the answer is almost very difficult to understand. And this allows you sort of a conceptual way to understand how the answer breaks up in terms of these pieces that are very well understood. And I should say that Mark Moholwald even was able to point out a few typos and misprints in their paper just by him knowing, you know, how this tower worked. So this thing, you know, this thing is really a useful perspective. No, I haven't yet, but I'm getting there. So let's get there right now, in fact. Let me say that a gamma zero, well, I guess I've done the unfortunate thing of choosing L, so to be consistent, a gamma zero L structure, this is a definition, on an elliptic curve C is a subgroup a cyclic subgroup H contained in the elliptic curve of order L. Now, you can consider the moduli space of elliptic curves. Well, I should say that, so let me mention one other thing that I forgot to mention. Jacob already talked about this in his talk, but now replace M mult with the moduli space of elliptic curves, which I'm going to write M-E-L-L, and then this O mult turns into... I'm really considering elliptic curves that are non-singular here. I have to stress that. So when I write M-E-L-L, I mean non-singular elliptic curves. And really, in fact, I mean, the work in K2 locally, I'm really just looking at some neighborhood of the supersingular points in this moduli space. But, you know, let's have this sort of more global discussion going on here. This thing goes to some sheaf of the infinity ring spectra that Jacob called O-derived sheaf, and I'll just write O-E-L-L, and this is this thing produced by Hopkins and Miller and Gorse and many other people, and the global sections of this thing is what is called TMF, and I'm writing capital TMF to emphasize that I've inverted the discriminant. I'm working in the non-singular elliptic curves. Similarly, I could consider the moduli space of, I'll write it M0L, the moduli space of elliptic curves with a gamma 0L structure. And, this actually sits over the moduli space of elliptic curves. And if I choose L appropriately, like prime to P, I'm working P locally, then this map is actually etal. And this sheaf is a sheaf in the etal topology. This is a forgetful map where you forget the gamma 0L structure. And so you're allowed to evaluate it on things like this. So I'm allowed to evaluate, take sections over this map. And this is what I mean by TMF 0L. You know, maybe I should have chosen a different route for this talk, because all this is so explicit that, you know, it seems almost a shame to bury it in sort of, you know, language that seems to obfuscate issues. I mean, really, you know, these things, you can really get your hands on them, and, you know, I'm not really too knowledgeable about these stacks and stuff, but I do know what Hopf algebroids are, and you can work with these things and, you know, actually compute things. I'm really just, interested in computing things, you know, but this is somehow a good way to think about all this. And, so I want to describe, in the last 10 minutes, I want to describe sort of an analog of what I described here in this setup. And I want you, in this picture, to zone in on the parts that don't have the sigma 48. Now, this sigma 48 is completely irrelevant for these spectra. It turns out these are actually eightfold. In fact, these spectra are so explicit. These spectra are just given by Johnson-Wilson spectrum, wedge of sigma 8 Johnson-Wilson spectrum. So, they're really nothing fancy about these things. And this is eightfold periodic. So this 48 doesn't mean anything. But TMF is 72 periodic. And so this 48 does mean something. And it's crucial in their work and a little mysterious. And, you know, so I'm going to describe this part of the resolution. I'm going to describe how this part of the resolution dualizes to give the other part of the resolution. And sort of maybe if I have time, say a few words about where the number 48 comes from. Now, so things are a little different here from our situation with the multiplicative group on this board here. And the idea is that, well, okay, so here we should look at C being a supersingular elliptic curve. And what that means is its formal group, C hat, has height 2. This is a height 2 formal group. And so this is something that models the Honda formal group, level 2. And I can take a look at the endomorphisms of C and take a look at the endomorphisms of C hat. Now, Actually, both of these are quaternion algebras, or orders of quaternion algebras. And they're certainly related in that way. And in fact, well, I certainly know this is true at the prime three. I may be hoping that, you know, maybe other people in the audience could tell me afterwards things that are actually true generally, but my sort of shameful lack of knowledge of these objects sort of prevent me from even thinking, you know, knowing why these things are true. But I know certainly at the prime three that this is, if you three complete this algebra, you get this algebra. It's an isomorphism after three completion. I mean, is that true generally? There's also NLC. These are endomorphisms of degree, a power of L of the elliptic curve. These things sit inside here. And at least for the case L equals 2 and P equals 3. And by the way, that's the situation in this Gortz-Hedman-Hold-Rest situation. L is equal to 2 and P is equal to 3. Well, certainly, you know, these things, they'll fit inside the automorphisms of, they factor through the automorphisms of C, which, remember, is the Morava stabilizer group. But it turns out that actually this, so this is a monoid. Give it a name, call it L. And this sits densely inside this profinite gadget here. And another thing I'm wondering is, is this true generally, or is there some, you know, is it known whether this always happens? Somehow I have some feeling that people that, you know, study these objects in their own right probably know things like this, whereas topologists like myself maybe don't. Right, so we have this picture, and so the corresponding picture to draw is we have the moduli space of elliptic curves. We can complete an elliptic curve. This goes to the moduli space of formal groups. See, sitting inside here is U2 intersect a neighborhood of V1, and sitting inside here is a neighborhood of the supersingular points of this, of, you know, the supersingular curves inside this moduli space. If I stay near the supersingular curves, that corresponds to staying near V1. And so what that means is that this will actually factor through here. And then, well, except that I've only modded out by automorphisms of the elliptic curves, but I also need to get rid of these endomorphisms that turn into automorphisms. So a hopeful thing would be to do something like this. Maybe I'll just write end L. And then this should descend to a map like this. And the question is this a good approximation? Well, it's not good in the sense that it produces an isomorphism like Jack's isomorphism, or this Adams, Baird, Ravenel isomorphism here. It's not that good, but it's okay. It's an okay approximation. Let me describe explicitly how to model this. So again, we're going to form the sort of simplicial gadget that I just erased on this board. And I'm going to form a simplicial stack. It may not be clear why this is exactly the right thing to do for this situation, but at least it at least is true. This is the right thing to do to model this for P equals 3 and L equals 2. So the idea is that you take, it's a simplicial stack whose zero simplices will be M. I'm just going to drop the ELL from the moduli space of elliptic curves. The one simplices are M02 and M, and the two simplices are M02. And here's my, again, this is a delta stack. I'm now messing around with degeneracies. And so sort of you should think about this simplicial object as corresponding to this thing here. Maybe I should have written SS over each one of these things. And so then you apply OELL to this diagram, you get a co-simplicial E-infinity ring spectrum that looks like TMF goes to TMF 0L for TMF. I didn't describe what these maps are. Let me do that momentarily. Take the totalization of this thing. this co-simplicial gadget. Oh, that's supposed to be L, but L is 2. So totalization of that thing, we'll call that QL. And this QL is exactly this piece that I circled over here. And it's an E-infinity ring spectrum because the totalization of a co-simplicial E-infinity ring spectrum. And, oh, right, I wanted to say what these maps are. So the idea is that the zero simplices are elliptic curves. There's two types of one simplices. We'll consider both elliptic curves with a, that's supposed to be an L, by the way. 2 is L, though, so I guess it doesn't make any difference. Okay, so we have elliptic curves with a gamma zero L structure, and then we have, so I'll call these maps phi H, but I also want to consider the Lth power maps from C to itself. And here, I'm going to put triangles of a certain relation that always holds. Namely, if I have an elliptic curve with a gamma zero L structure, I can quotient out by it. This is an isogeny of degree L. But I can take the dual isogeny, and then this will map back to C. This is composite is not the identity, but it can't be. But it is the Lth power map. This always holds for an elliptic curve. And these maps are just the obvious. These give you the source and the target. These read off the faces of this triangle. This is a sort of like a nerve-like construction. And that's what this is here. I guess I should say in the last minute what the relevance of this is to this picture here. And then I'll stop. Little L is 2. Little L is... So, little L, I think you should choose L just like you did in the K1 local situation. But my lack of knowledge of when... You want L to be chosen such that this thing is dense, if you can even do such a thing in general. I mean, you know, I'm speaking always from this perspective, only knowing the examples and not knowing how the theory works. So, you know, but L is co-prime to P, and even better sometimes. Okay, so... Right. So the conjecture here is that you can take a look at the K2 Spanier-Whitehead dual, like what Nora was talking about. So this is working in the K2 local category. Look at the K2 Spanier-Whitehead dual. So that's I'm just going to write it as D. And I have a unit map. This is an E-infinity ring spectrum, so it in particular has a unit. And well, I could also take the Spanier-Whitehead dual and get a map in the opposite direction. But of course, these things are the same. This is DQL. And the conjecture is that this composite is a cofiber sequence. So this is a sort of half of the K2 local sphere, or as Mike sort of told me, explained to me, as sort of motivated this, it's sort of a Lagrangian for the self-duality of the K2 local sphere. And the theorem is that this is true when L is equal to 2 and P is equal to 3. And I should also mention that the Spanier-Whitehead dual, I'm out of time, the Spanier-Whitehead dual would be obtained by taking the simplicial object where I apply the Spanier-Whitehead dual to each one of these things. And another observation is that in this situation with P equals 3, the Spanier-Whitehead dual of TMF is sigma 44 TMF. And 44 plus 4 is equal to 48. And 4 is the length of the resolution. So this is the right number. So let's end here.